Hey, good morning, Mike Causey. Welcome to you. Glad to have you here today, and as we're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Going to have a good show following the money and looking at your job promotion prospects and actually, in this case, protection. My first guest is Carol Bonacero. She is president of the Senior Executives Association and herself a former member of the Senior Executive Service. Carol, are you with us?
Absolutely. Good morning.
Thank you for being here today. Boy, so much going on. It's hard to figure out where to start. But a good start is an email we got from a senior GS-15, somebody getting near the top of the SES ladder, and he is with the Internal Revenue Service. And he says, actually, it's a several-part question, if I can read it to you. As a GS-15 facing the maximum salary in the next year or so, I find the current pay cap limiting. I know I can earn more in the private sector, but I do like what I'm doing. I had contemplated moving up into the SES ranks, but after I read today about the proposed VA legislation, I might just change my mind. Would you first say what he's talking about here, the proposed VA legislation?
Sure. You know, he's a poster child for the next generation and why we worry about the next generation. But in any event, the bill is H.R. 4031, and it allows the VA secretary to fire senior executives basically without any due process. Not that they have very much to begin with, but or to place them back in any grade in the general schedule. And it's sponsored by Chairman Miller and has a growing list of co-sponsors, and the speaker has been supporting legislation. It's arisen from concerns about the benefits backlog at VA and some preventable patient deaths. And I think what it shows more and more is that Congress is getting very much into looking at essentially not only the SES core, but almost individual senior executives and how agencies are managing performance. And it's very worrisome because that bill, if it's adopted, could well be a model that other committees may look to say, well, we don't like what's going on at agency X, Y, or Z. Let's give the secretary authority to do that. And it really poses the danger of politicizing the SES.
Well, the interesting thing to me is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Secretary Shinseki, of the head of the Veterans Administration, said he doesn't want this, right? Doesn't need it?
Correct. And he really doesn't, because senior executives can be removed right now. In fact, there's mandatory removal from the SES if you have two minimally successful ratings within 5 years, or one unsat and two minimally within 3 years. If there's one unsatisfactory rating, you have to be removed to another SES position in which presumably you could succeed, or removed from the SES. So, and really your appeal rights are quite limited. So it really is unnecessary, and it does. Obviously, the Congress is placing its judgment before the secretaries.
Well, you know, as you well know, back in the days of the draft, you know, talk about World War II, Korea, and Vietnam, just about everybody in the United States had a connection with somebody in the military. Either we were in it, or we had a relative or a friend who was. And some people had a lot of connections. And they also knew the VA very well. And my father was in a VA hospital. Most of my uncles were in the VA hospitals. And you're talking about a really aging population. The World War II men and women are now in their late 80s and early 90s. The Vietnam people are in their late 60s, early 70s. So many of these problems that they're having are not necessarily service-connected, although the service is taking care of them, but they're just problems associated with age.
Indeed, and what's really troublesome is that, let's go to the preventable death issue. The Republicans who are pushing the bill claim there were 31 preventable patient deaths in VA hospitals last year. we hear from other sources that the number is closer to 19. VA serves millions of vets each year, so either way, it's no one ever wants to see a preventable death. But if you look at the data nationwide in hospitals, there are nearly 440,000 preventable deaths in hospitals across the U.S. annually. So I think that it's really too bad, because the VA has had tremendous breakthroughs in medical services that are really astonishing, that few people know about.
Well, and I think, too, and I've been in a couple of VA hospitals, I think a lot of people don't realize that a number of the people that are in there have diseases or issues associated with drugs, with alcoholism, and AIDS was a problem for a long time.
Indeed. So, for example, some of the so-called preventable suicides, they're certainly troublesome. But when you dig deeper, it can be a very tough population, and they really are doing a good job. But, a good deal of what Congress does, unfortunately, often is to play to the media. And play to the veterans groups, although I hasten to add that a couple of the veterans groups are not supporting this legislation, because I think they understand that it really does nothing to improve anything.
This letter from the GS-15 at the IRS, it's a several-part question. He said, and you've answered this, he said, I thought the SES ranks serve at the pleasure of the president. But in fact, as you said, they have to get certain ratings or they're automatically out.
Yeah, and, frankly, you know this too, Mike, that there are some people who have been perfectly good performers who, unfortunately, in comes a political appointee who just doesn't like that senior executive for one reason or another, makes their life miserable, and forces them out, whether into retirement or into another position. So it can be, at times, like having one foot in the banana peel in any event. And it is worrisome, because so much of what's happening now, when you add it all up, for someone who would be a wonderful candidate, someone who's able, capable, has experience, they're looking at senior executive service saying, why in the world would I do that? And that's very worrisome, given the retirement eligibility of the current SES population.
Yeah, well, I've done a number of exit interviews with political appointees, some of whom came in disliking or hating the civil service, and midway they changed their mind, and in some cases they tried to take them with them when they left. But talking with Carol Bonacero here, need to take a short break on Federal News Radio. We'll be right back.
This is John Gilroy from Fed Tech Talk. Wanted to tell you about a local company that has had a national impact on airline safety. For the past 3 decades, Electromech has worked with federal agencies to make sure aircraft wiring is safe and reliable. Electromech is responsible for testing, inspecting, and analyzing a wide range of electrical wire interconnect systems. For a white paper on addressing fleet management needs, please visit electromech.com. That's electromec.com.
Psoriasis and vitiligo are serious diseases. You've tried everything and have been disappointed. Now there's X-Track, a breakthrough treatment that provides long-lasting, safe relief. X-Track is FDA cleared for the treatment of psoriasis and vitiligo and is endorsed by thousands of dermatologists and hospitals because it works. Clinical studies show immediate results with up to 95% clearance. The in-office visits are fast, painless, with virtually no side effects. With thousands of providers treating patients all over the country, X-Track is covered by all major insurance companies and Medicare. We'll help you find a doctor close by, and there is no cost to you until you see results. Get your life back. Live free. Live X-Track Clear. For your no-cost treatment, call now, 800-959-9852. That's 800-959-9852. 800-959-9852. Or visit xtracradio.com. Qualified patients, certain restrictions apply. Results may vary.
Are you ready to race for impact? Are you ready to race for the cure? Join Susan G. Komen Global Race for the Cure this Mother's Day weekend on the National Mall. Saturday, May 10th marks the 25th anniversary of the Susan G. Komen Global Race for the Cure events in Washington, D.C. With fun for the whole family, including a race just for kids, everyone can help fund life-saving breast cancer screenings, treatment, and support services for the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. Last year alone, programs receiving National Capital Area grants provided over 18,000 mammograms, educated more than 190,000 women about breast health, and assisted over 6,000 women in receiving timely and high-quality treatment services. But the work doesn't stop there, so get ready to race for impact. Get ready to race for the cure, Saturday, May 10th on the National Mall. Register today at globalraceforthecure.org. That's globalraceforthecure.org.
Research shows that 90% of feds are using at least one mobile device for work purposes, yet just 53% of agencies require regular security training. How do we stay one step ahead of threats? Join Mobile Work Exchange for the 2014 Town Hall meeting on April 10th at the Washington, D.C. Convention Center to discuss the latest trends and best practices in mobile IT. Register today by visiting mobileworkexchange.com/townhallmeeting. That's mobileworkexchange.com/townhallmeeting.
Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, and I'm talking with Carol Bonacero. Carol is president of the Senior Executives Association, herself a former member of the Senior Executive Service. And the earlier part of the show, she was answering a question from a senior GS-15 at the IRS, and he had questions about legislation that's been introduced. It's pending, and it seems to be picking up steam, at least in the House, and there was a couple of co-sponsors in the Senate. But it would give the Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs, the VA, it would give the secretary the authority to fire SES members almost at will, or to bump them down to, if for whatever reason he decided to do it, he could make them a GS-3, presumably. And Carol, the question is, what impact is this going to have on the Senior Executives Association, if our Senior Executive Service, if it happens in one agency, the VA, which is second or third largest federal agency, who's next? And Carol, he had a question here. He says, if the proposed VA legislation actually passes, could similar legislation be enacted for the rest of the SES community? What would the impact to the SES ranks be if the proposed legislation does pass, becomes law, and then spreads to other federal agencies?
Well, I think you have to ask, the impact would be horrible, and you have to ask yourself the question, who in their right mind would want to take these positions? Because it would be, if we look right now at what's going on in Congress and the media, and how some of these concerns develop when they're pumped up and folks play to the media and to people at home, and it's really can lead very easily to politicizing the Senior Executive Service. Why would anyone take a risk? Why would anyone want to be innovative? I think it would put a real damper on performance. And indeed, you know, this is our concern. And in the Senate, Senator Rubio has already tried to add his companion bill on the floor and to amend another bill and add it. So we've been working very hard on the Hill. There is another bill that's been introduced that takes a different tack. In fact, a couple of its provisions we actually welcome. And what the bill does, it's H.R. 4399, it deals with the SES Performance Management System at the VA. And the only concern is it makes changes to what's supposed to be a government-wide system. But the good news is it requires the secretary to communicate goals to senior executives, their performance goals in a timely manner, and to provide a detailed explanation if senior executive receives a rating of less than fully successful. It does have some other provisions, obviously, as well. But at least it takes the tack of saying, let's look at the system rather than trying to look at how to punish folks that, you know, the secretary is in a much better position to assess their performance.
Right, and the irony of it is the secretary of the head of the Department of Veterans Affairs doesn't want this legislation.
Correct, said he doesn't need it, which indeed he doesn't. So you know, what we're looking at too is really the and I'm not so sure. I'm going to say slow, but I'm not so sure it's been slow. But the disintegration of the SES pay and performance management system, you know, in 2004, what had been SES ranks were eliminated, a broad pay band was adopted, and all pay adjustments, were to be based on performance. So there's no locality pay, which is an issue in and of itself. There are no cost of living adjustments, and everything, the pay adjustments, performance awards, all depend on performance. So as we've watched, you know, certainly the pay freeze and then the cutback in the pools that are available for performance awards, the attacks on the SES and therefore bills like this, what we see is, and by the way, let me also add the suspension of the presidential rank awards last year and the failure so far this year to issue a call for nominations. So, you know, this is not looking like a very attractive place to be, and it's very worrisome.
Are you feeling, you as head of the Senior Executives Association, are you guys feeling like the unwanted stepchild with this administration?
Well, I think that's becoming a reasonable conclusion because, and it's frustrating because we know that career leadership is essential to really meet the goals that any administration has. And you know, you mentioned prior to the break the business of the career political interface, mm-hmm. if you will, that relationship, and our interest has always been in providing information to appointees to let them know, look, this is the group that's going to help make you successful. Here are some ways you can hit the ground running with them instead of making this a long, painful learning process. So it's really baffling to me that an administration which often looks to the private sector doesn't understand that the private sector would never treat its top leadership this way.
Yeah, in my column today, the headline I think is something like are these the good old days right now? Looking at what's happened to federal workers over the last 4 years, 3 years of pay freeze, 1% pay raise, furloughs, shutdowns, and threats to the retirement system. But it could be that not very much has happened, although there are the threats out there, and it could be that by 2015 people will look back on this period as the good old days because so little happened. Question here from listener says, the Paul Ryan's proposed Path to Prosperity budget outline would seriously impact federal employees both now and in the future. And one of the things that would do, and it's not necessarily for action this year, but one of those things it would do is raise retirement contributions of current employees and possibly eliminate the retirement system, at least what they call the defined benefit portion of the retirement system for future federal workers.
You know, we can't have it both ways. The reason that feds have had a good benefits package is because everyone understood that they were never going to have comparable pay to the private sector. So how could you entice them, if you will? Although we know that the federal employees aren't in it for the money. I mean, the vast, vast majority care deeply about what they do. But if we're going to start attacking the benefits package and we refuse to deal with pay issues, where does that leave us? You know, we're doing, we find ourselves now doing a lot of surveys of our membership. We did a survey a couple of months ago. We're going to be releasing a report in the next week or two on pay and performance management and how that system has been working or not working this past year. We're in the middle of a survey right now of our members with regard to retirement and the factors which are influencing their decisions, because this is really becoming very concerning to us on two levels. One, I've already mentioned the future leadership, you know, who's going to want these jobs. But really what it speaks to is, are the taxpayers going to get the kind of services and programs that they expect and deserve if you don't have good career leadership in place? And as you well know, political appointees come and go.
Right. Average life expectancy on the job is 18 months, according to the Brookings Institution. Carol, I noticed on the front page of your magazine for members called Action, there's a story here. It says SES members surveyed on performance appraisal process. And the headline says that 51% say that morale is low. Is that more than in the past? Is it less?
Well, we haven't done that survey before, but I've just got to believe. I know that I've never seen morale this low. You know, we've been through tough times before, and I know that, you know, it's easy to look back and perhaps not recall how tough it was, but there are just too many things that are piling on now, and I think that really is a horrendous number.
You know, if you look at the comments in the column, they're very political in nature, and I think this is a problem we're all dealing with here. But, Carol, we need to take a short break, and we'll be right back here on Federal News Radio.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Here's Douglas Lovero, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Space Policy at DOD, on the Satellite Communications Acquiring SATCOM in Tight Times panel, sponsored by SES Government Solutions.
For the wideband global SATCOM satellite, if we have a unmanned aerial vehicle that has a camera in it that is wideband with a video feed, we actually can't do that for the capability we want over a commercial satellite, but we can use some of our military satellites to do that. So designed for different purposes, for different sets of users, and yet we need them both to support DOD operations.
Government Solutions exists for one purpose, to meet the satellite communications needs of the U.S. government. With the largest satellite fleet in the world, SES's 55 satellites support the men and women of every branch of the military. In the current budget environment, more must be done to ensure our troops have access to critical communications, and SES is stepping up to the challenge. SES Government Solutions, bandwidth and beyond. Visit them at ses-gs.com. That's www.ses-gs.com.
There's good reason you see red, white, and blue Ackerman signs protecting your neighbors' homes. Here's why your neighbors chose Ackerman. Nationally recognized UL and CSAA 5 Diamond certified monitoring for just $18.95 a month. The only company with a guaranteed response time, free to switch your existing service. Don't be confused by all the newcomers to the security industry. Trust the experts who have protected families like yours for over 40 years. Ackerman Security. Switch to Ackerman and receive up to 3 months free monitoring. Call today 888-999-1070 or visit AckermanSecurity.com.
And if technology is your thing, Ackerman's Total Connect lets you stay connected anytime, anywhere. You can control locks, thermostats, and lighting remotely with a tap on your smartphone or tablet. You can even view video or receive video clips when certain events occur at home. So remember, switch to Ackerman and get up to 3 months monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
Augusta Westland, bringing innovation to vertical flight for over 50 years.
ready to deliver the latest generation of helicopters to U.S. government customers.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
General John Campbell's Vice Chief of Staff of the United States Army.
The total force, again, not just the Army, has to be able to conduct two different major contingency operations at a time. Under 420, we would not be able to do that. Some of the assumptions when they think about, hey, at 420 you can still do this, people talk about no rotation, so you deploy and you're all in. We didn't do that in Iraq and Afghanistan. We didn't do it in World War II. We won't do it in the future. So that's a bad assumption.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with Carol Bonacero. She's president of the Senior Executives Association. We've been talking about retirement and executives and the VA situation and all that. Carol, when President Obama was elected, well, before he was elected, I think all of the federal unions endorsed him. Of course, the associations like yours don't do that, but I think all of the unions or the union leadership endorsed him. And he came in, John Berry was his director of Office of Personnel Management. He was the guy that knew the government. And he had been sort of Steny Hoyer's point man in Congress, getting federal workers raise after raise under the, despite the Clinton administration, I would say. And I think a lot of people had high hopes. President Obama said he wanted to make federal employment cool again. And yet now we have sequestration, which came out of the White House. We have the three-year federal pay freeze, two of which were proposed by the White House. The White House has proposed raising contribution rates for federal workers. And although the Republicans are getting a lot of the heat for this, the fact is that the White House is in on it, too. And as you've pointed out before, the White House is kind of ignoring the senior executives in that it won't publicize or deal with the awards, or the awards that are due them have not been made. Do you think that some of the leadership in the federal community is disappointed with the White House?
Well, I would think so. I mean, perhaps each for their own reasons. We're disappointed. We're baffled. We really don't understand why they don't get it. They're very often playing defense. And, I know I've said this before, probably to the point of boredom, but it's always amazed me that, as you know, from going to our banquet each year and hearing what these distinguished rank executives have accomplished, why they've never looked at that as an opportunity to let the American public know what incredible things government has accomplished, what incredible things federal employees have accomplished. We've had Nobel Prize winners, just amazing people. And instead, I think they have focused wrongfully on worrying about, well, gee whiz, these people get a substantial monetary award. It's a once-in-a-lifetime achievement, or award, I should say. And if you look at the savings that are documented in their nominations, frankly, the awards amount to a pittance of the billions of dollars that they save for government.
Yeah, so, they should ask for a percentage.
Yeah. Well, gee, why didn't we think of that when we got the amount of the award changed to a percentage of salary? But it's a lost opportunity, and there have just been so many lost opportunities, as well as what we think are just not very smart decisions that have been made.
You know, it's too bad that you can't have some independent person, a Ken Burns type, come in and do a documentary just of that banquet, because I've been to most of them, many of them at any rate, and I've been at the table, as you said, with Nobel Prize winners and with people who saved the government, the taxpayers, billions of dollars. And this is not paper stuff. This is documentable. And there they are, and oftentimes the head of the agency has come there, and the direct commissioner of the IRS has come several times to these things. But if you could do a documentary, have somebody skillfully highlight some of these winners and show what they did and look at their families and see that they are the people you see every day on the subway and in the street, but the remarkable things they do. And then that setting, the State Department looking off into the distance at the memorials and the Washington Monument. It's a breathtaking. I think it would change a lot of people's concept about what government workers, particularly at the higher levels, do.
I couldn't agree more, and it is the great frustration of my life that we have never been able to interest the media in this. I think that certainly it's been because the banquet occurs several months after the actual words are determined, although in this administration we've ended up being the people essentially announcing them. So it's just it's unfathomable to me why there is obviously some magic secret I haven't discovered. As to how you interest the media in this. Part of the issue, though, I will say, is the difficulty of getting senior executives to speak to the media. And it's not that they don't want to. It's that very often agency procedures preclude them from doing so. There's a lot of nervousness about it. And that's unfortunate because the media always wants to put an individual face to these things, although, you know, that certainly shouldn't be a problem when it comes to the rank awards.
Well, unfortunately, bad news is good news. And was the saying, if it bleeds, it leads, you know, so that's that's sort of the nature of these.
Yeah.
Carol Boncero, thank you so much for being with us, and we'll get you back here again and get an assessment, an update on the VA legislation and what's happening with other federal workers. We're going to take a short break here, and we'll be right back talking with Nicole Johnson and Andy Medici from the Federal Times.
What are the strategic priorities for the GSA's Office of Integrated Technology Services? How does ITS maximize the value of government IT while also lowering its cost? What is ITS doing to improve its operations and become more efficient and agile? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and more with Mary Davey, Assistant Commissioner, Office of the Integrated Technology Services in GSA's Federal Acquisition Service. Tune in on Mondays at 11 a.m. for the Business of Government Hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Everyone in D.C. talks about cutting the cost of this or increasing the performance of that, but no one talks about just how they're going to do it. While we're talking about it, we're Brocade. And Brocade can make your organization's network so agile and efficient, jaws will drop and costs will plummet dramatically. So say goodbye to your old complicated network and hello to the automated network of tomorrow. Say hello to Brocade. Get the facts at brocade.com/networkfacts.
Here's Gene Holm, evangelist for data.gov at GSA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Big Data, sponsored by Cloudera.
The idea is really, how do we take all of that data and pull it together to be meaningful? And I think part of that is simulation, visualization, and virtualization. Mm-hmm. Be able to create not only our understanding of historical facts and why things happened a certain way, but really being able to predict that into the future.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Data is a critical asset for your agency. To be truly information-driven, you need more than just data. You need to manage risk and cost. Make the shift to an enterprise data hub powered by Cloudera and gain a single, low-cost platform where you can efficiently and securely store, govern, and analyze your data. With Cloudera, you can build for scale and collaboration, complement existing systems, and still have security, compliance, data protection, and management control with big data. Rethink data management. Learn more at cloudera.com.
Hey, everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show.
Next Sunday, April 13th, we're going to be talking Passover. It's time to get your table ready. And how does your garden grow? We're going to get tips on how to best start off your garden.
That's Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday at 11 right here on 1500 AM.
Profile America, Wednesday, April 9th. For much of history, a cooked meal was followed by the drudgery of scrubbing the pans used to prepare it. But something was discovered this week in 1938 that changed all that, a solidified refrigerant gas that we now know as Teflon. Developed by Roy Plunkett of the DuPont Company, slippery Teflon revolutionized cooking utensils in the 1960s. By the time he died in the early 1990s, 3 out of 4 of all cooking pans in the nation were coated with his invention. Today, Teflon is used in everything from semiconductors to communications cables and even clothing. The nation's chemical industry generates more than $716 billion a year in sales and provides jobs for over 800,000 workers. You can find more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
In today's competitive job market, imagine not having the reading skills needed to even fill out an application. 90,000 adults in D.C. are considered functionally illiterate. It takes a lot for an adult to admit they can't read. It takes even more courage to do something about it. The Washington Literacy Center teaches adult learners to read, giving them options and a bright future. Please give back to the community by donating today. Go to WashingtonLiteracyCenter.org and make your much-needed charitable contribution. Changing lives through literacy. WashingtonLiteracyCenter.org.
Federal News Radio's Mike Causey is on Twitter. Follow him at MCauseyWFED for his latest columns covering federal pay, benefits, and retirement. At MCauseyWFED.
Mike Causey here. Welcome back to Your Turn. Now we come to a fun part of the show when I talk to Nicole Johnson and Andy Medici from the Federal Times. Folks, you with us?
We're here.
Yeah, it's always good to be
here.
Hey,
thank you. Thank you for coming on. When we were exchanging emails back and forth about today's show, someone used the term, they said we can talk about the remote chance of a federal pay hike, which has got to make people's ears perk up. We have a couple of proposals out there. One is the 1%. I believe that's in the president's budget, and the other is the 3.3% pay raise that's been proposed by a batch of Democratic members of the House. Which are they both remote?
Well, the 1% is definitely more doable. I think there is a good chance that federal employees will get that 1% pay raise this year. It's the 3.3% payers that is a little bit more pie in the sky, Mike. A lot of the lawmakers that even propose legislation that I've talked to, Connolly, Elijah Cummings, and others have said that really the legislation is what they want to do is help move the discussion away from low pay raises towards higher pay raises. So even if the chance of getting a 3.3% pay raise this year is remote, they're hoping that it will at least move the needle in terms of negotiations and discussions so that in future years the pay raise discussion could have a greater range and maybe not be stuck at that none or 1%.
You know, this is one of these things, and Nicole, please feel free to jump in on this. It seems to be the Carter administration and the Clinton administration were united in that they wanted to look at federal pay from a total compensation viewpoint. That is to factor in fringe benefits like retirement, number of vacation days, holidays, and that sort of thing. And they both said that if that were done, then federal pay might come out to be exceeding the private sector. Of course, it didn't happen, but nobody's looked at it that way. Nobody's proposed doing it. So meantime, you have the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which every year comes out with the pay survey, and the pay agent says that federal workers on average are paid something like 35% less than their counterparts. And then you have the Heritage Foundation and many parts of the media who come up with using similar figures, which say that federal workers are overpaid 20% to 25%. Where is this going to end?
Well, I think that's part of this ongoing debate. A lot of people are still at odds over, are federal employees underpaid or are they overpaid? And I spoke to House Minority Leader Steny Hoyer a few weeks ago, and he said that part of this debate is if people want to object to the pay agent and to what the pay agent says, they should pass new legislation that sets the parameters for how to calculate federal employee pay. At the moment, you know, the pay agent comes to every year and says federal employees are underpaid. If lawmakers want a new benchmark for that, they need to pass legislation to do so.
Sort of the irony of it is that I guess it was the 1990 Federal Employee Pay Act, FEPCA, they call it. It was passed by a Democratic Congress, signed by George H.W. Bush, a Republican president. The first president to actually implement it was Bill Clinton, and in essence, he trashed it, said, you know, I'm not going to do this until we have total compensation. George W. Bush followed him and followed in Clinton's footsteps. So, in effect, the Federal Pay Act, the one that's on the books, it's in law, of 1990, has never been complied with.
Well, it's one of those situations where a lot of people don't agree with the result that they get, so they ignore it. And that happens from time to time with legislation. And I think the idea is that for a lot of people, that page does set the discussion, though, and the discussion itself is valuable. But the problem is that the divide on both sides might be a little too deep in terms of trying to get to some sort of fair pay equity for federal employees.
Yeah, you see these political polls, and they say there's a plus or minus error factor of 2% or 1.5% or something. This one, the case for federal pay, there's a plus or minus factor of between of 27 plus and 35 minus. So that's a very hard way to figure out if federal workers are paid the right amount, too much, or not enough.
No, exactly. And sometimes the debate is even how do you compare federal employees to the private sector? A lot of those jobs either simply don't translate or they don't have a private sector equivalent. So the discussion can get really into the weeds, and it can be really frustrating.
The National Aeronautics and Space Administration does not have greeters when you walk in the building like Walmart. Nicole, you are into the world, the cloud world, and you said wanted to talk about cloud computing spending and challenges.
Yeah, the Office of Management and Budget, they provided some statistics showing how much agencies are projected to spend this year on internet-based services, which is essentially cloud computing. And that number totals about $2.8 billion, at least on the civilian side. The Defense Department numbers have yet to be released. But it's interesting once you break down those numbers, you hear federal agencies often talk about using Amazon or using a Microsoft to get those lower costs in terms of sharing resources with others. You know, the costs will go down. And they talk about putting out, you know, public websites in public infrastructure where contractors are managing it. And the fact is that though they're talking about it, it's not translating that way in terms of spending. It's a very small percentage of the overall spending, I think about 3%, that's actually going out public information, going in public cloud computing infrastructure. So although they want the savings, the concern about the security of government data is still driving that discussion.
Now, there was a revelation today. I heard it on WTOP coming in about a new computer breach, and they were saying that X number of people should change their passwords. Does that affect any of us?
Well, that's going around. I'm checking in now with the Defense Department and other agencies to see what the impact will be on government websites as well as their contractors. But you're absolutely right. It's something that everyone's concerned about. It's been a while since we've heard about kind of a massive internet security flaw that's affecting everyone, even, you know, just the average person who has an online banking or even, you know, a Yahoo email account. So I think everyone's still trying to grasp, what does this mean for me? Do I need to change my passwords? Do I not need to change my passwords? So we're still filling out how that's going to translate on the federal front.
Well, when Frank Herzog was with WTOP, he's one of the best sports reporters Washington has ever seen. And when he finally retired, he said he'd run out of passwords. So I think some of us are approaching that level.
Absolutely frustrated. We're already there. And in fact, I know the government is working on an initiative, at least starting with federal websites, where there is a way to have a digital credential so you're not having to keep so many different websites. You're writing them down in places and losing them. And that's, of course, not secure. That defeats the whole purpose of a password. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. I'll be ready for the day when I can ditch some of mine.
Yeah, maybe fingerprints or something. But Andy, a lot of talk about GSA and property swaps. What's that mean? What's that up?
Well, this is an effort that evolved over the last few years with Congress sort of cutting the amount that GSA can pay to build new buildings and renovate old ones. And the idea is that GSA has the authority to take excess buildings or buildings that they don't use very much and trade them for either, you know, money or services or other buildings. And part of GSA's plan is to take several what they call underutilized buildings in Federal Triangle. That includes the two FAA buildings, the Cotton Annex that's part of the Department of Agriculture, and even their own regional headquarters, and use them to sort of transform Federal Triangle into sort of a mixed-use, what they call eco-district, friendlier, greener, more retail, and also to use some of that, some of those proceeds to help renovate other buildings, for example, their own headquarters, and part of the DHS consolidation over at St. Elizabeth's. The idea is that you can get a package deal by sort of offering up these properties to developers who will, in exchange, provide you with construction or renovation services elsewhere.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. And the scope of the the things that GSA handles. You know, it's a fairly tiny agency, but its coverage is immense, isn't it?
Well, it's one of the primary landlords for office workers. They only have about 10,000 buildings that they manage or own. And while that's only about 10% of the total government inventory, DOD controls most of it. They're the familiar landlord for a lot of federal office workers, and a lot of the decisions that they make impact people. You know, they're the ones who brokered the deal with Donald Trump for the old post office building. So they have a lot of authority when it comes to where federal employees are and where they're going to be in 5 or 10 years.
I wanted to ask you about the pension application backlog. As it is now, when you retire from the government, the federal government goes through the Office of Personnel Management. Big story about it in the Washington Post the other day. They referred to a bureaucratic sinkhole in Boyers, Pennsylvania, which probably didn't make the folks at Boyers very happy. But the fact is, it's largely a paperwork operation. When you turn in your retirement application, the OPM checks it out, puts you on an interim payment, and it could be anywhere from 80% to as little as 40% of what you're estimated to finally get. In most cases, it takes a couple of months, but for some people, we've all talked to people who it's taken a year or more. I just wanted to ask you, Andy, about the backlog, and Nicole, what part IT plays in this, because it is still largely a paper operation.
Yeah, Mike. Part of this issue is that you're right, it's an entirely sort of analog operation in a digital world, and they require papers from every agency you work for. If you had military service, that factors in, and it's just a very slow process. And you're right, the people we talk to, you know, I can't say exactly what they say because it's for the radio,
yeah.
But people are very frustrated with the amount of time it takes and how far off the annuities are, and this is something that OPM has struggled with repeatedly in the past.
No, you're absolutely right, Andy. And actually, OPM recently came out with an IT strategy where they address this very thing. I think the fact that so many federal employees are doing things online in their personal lives, you kind of scratch your head and wonder, why are we still doing, you know, this process in a paper-based manner? And they did call out the fact that, you know, they're working on modernizing these processes, going to a digital system, but this is not something that's going to happen overnight. Of course, the transition from going from paper to digital requires money, requires funding. And you look at these IT budgets and you look at, you know, funding across agencies, and you wonder, where's that money going to come from?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen these files, and for many people, it's a very large box, sometimes two, and it's full of paper. You know, your Army discharge, your when you left the government, when you came back, when you moved to another agency, there's all sorts of reports in there. It's a nightmarish chore.
You're right, Mike, and even if they are to make changes, if trying to transition to an entirely digital system won't help a lot of people who are retiring the next 10 or 20 or even 25 years. It would be implemented for new employees coming into the system so that they can sort of have a digital tag that follows them throughout government and eventually make that process easier, but it's definitely going to be a long slog.
A question for both of you. Representative Paul Ryan introduced his Path to Prosperity outline this week, and he's chairman of the House Budget Committee. He was a former vice presidential candidate. He's a rising star in the Republican Party, and many people admire him. The budget deal has been set for 2 years, and yet he brings in this outline for major spending cuts, which include having federal workers, current and future, kick in a lot more toward their retirement than they do now, and possibly for future federal workers, having no retirement plan at all. That would be a defined contribution, but not a defined benefit plan. It's not going to happen this year, unless you guys know something I don't. If it's not going to happen this year, why did he do it? I mean, did he stick a stick in a beehive? What's this all about?
Well, over the last few years, every year Paul Ryan does introduce a budget proposal, and it leans pretty heavily on cutting federal pay and benefits. I think for Paul Ryan and for the Republican Party, this is sort of like a highway marker. It definitely points the direction of things that the party would want to do. It's almost like their own version of the budget request that for House Republicans and for a lot of people that follow Paul Ryan's example, it's sort of a list of things that they might tackle or that they'd want to do or the way they envision government should be. So you're right, the chances of it becoming law are non-existent, but it serves as a useful reminder of where certain people are coming from in terms of how they see the government and its role in the country. So for a lot of federal employees, you know, they're frustrated and disturbed by that because, you know, politics is cyclical. And while there's a Democratic Senate and president now, that won't always be the case. So that is something of concern for federal employees.
Nicole, we've got about a minute, but you mentioned something in our back and forth about NASA's initiative to make more of its software code available to agencies and public. What does that mean?
Yeah, it's a pretty neat story. It's something that NASA actually in their charter, it talks about the technology that they create, not only using it in space, but finding a way to make it applicable in our everyday lives. And so they're creating a software catalog, essentially, where they're going to provide more than 1,000 codes of software free online for people to download to use for different uses, project management systems, design tools. I know there are some medical facilities today using NASA software to schedule MRIs. And so it's neat not only for people in the public who want to use data, contractors and companies, rather than going out and buying something they can see what's already available for them to use, as well as federal agencies. The administration talks a lot about shared services and reuse, and this is a great example of an agency trying to promote that.
It's amazing how much good fallout there is from NASA, from the space research and that kind of thing, and outfits like DARPA. That may be one of the reasons that federal workers are paid as well as they are, is there are not many places in the private sector like that.
No, you can't go out online and buy some of the things that they're doing.
Andy and Nicole, thank you very much for being here. I hope to talk to you next week. Everybody, have a good week. We hope to see you back here Wednesday at 10 a.m.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.